Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Full or part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Okay, and the Media Project is underway for another week. I'm Ira Fussfeld, the publisher of the Daily Freeman of Kingston, New York, along with Alan Shartok, the CEO and president of WAMC Northeast Public Radio, professor emeritus at the State University, publisher of the Legislative Gazette, and Rosemary Armeo of the University of Albany, investigative reporter par excellence. And we sit here after the end of the WAMC Great Fun Drive. So Alan has got his relaxed mode on after 10 days of really an amazing job of raising $1 million. Several days now since that's happened, but you've recovered?
No, it takes me a couple of weeks to recover. What happens is the adrenaline literally falls out of your body. And from that moment on, you're running on pure adrenaline. I'm sure Rosemary knows it when she's doing an investigation. You know, it's a matter of fear and adrenaline and all the rest of it. And then, you know, when you have a chance to settle down, you do two things. You settle down, the adrenaline leaves your body, and you have a glass of Chateau Neuf de Poupe de Pop.
Just one, huh?
Chateau Neuf de Poupe de Pop.
Well, now look what's going on in Northern Europe, in particular in Scandinavia, where they have historically, first of all, the public broadcasters there are very well listened to and watched. It's a significant part of their media, and that the public money that they receive is literally through a license fee that the government charges each person in
who
that
has a radio or television.
Every household.
Right. Well, that, of course, is
the BBC model.
That's where it goes.
Yeah.
It comes from.
And in Scandinavia now, they are rethinking that. And it's got
so people. Are the Brits, by the way.
Do you know why they're rethinking it? Are people complaining about it?
There's a certain competitiveness between the private sector and the public sector everywhere. Now, when Margaret Thatcher became the prime minister, she brought a very conservative point of view in. And we had a deputation from England coming here to see how we did it, because they were being told they were going to have to do it that way, which is to go to the people who used it to pay up for it. I don't know whatever happened, but I do remember having a fascinating discussion with them saying everything was going to change over there.
Well, in Finland, they're talking about, they meaning Parliament, is talking about a different kind of a fee structure that would be based on the amount of money that a household makes and would then be levied on every residence. I mean, it seems to me, I don't know, I'm not in the radio business. It seems to me forcing it down people's throats this way, while it assures the revenue stream, is not being swallowed very well, no pun intended.
Well, it's so interesting that you say that, because that's the sewerage model in my little town of Great Barrington where we live. You pay per bathroom and how much sewerage, you put out. Whereas there's a big debate going on in our little town about whether that's the way you should do it or whether you should be charged by how many people are in the house.
But each time, if the government mandates a fee, regardless of how that fee is determined,
yes,
doesn't that put the broadcaster in the position that it doesn't or shouldn't want to be in, which is beholden to the government?
Yes.
Well, it doesn't. They've argued that in about the BBC for a long time. But the truth is that the government there has levied this fee, insuring money for broadcasting.
So in comes
for
Ronald Reagan and
that's
says,
important.
Yes, and in comes Ronald Reagan and says, we don't want to do that. And in come the right-wingers and say, hey, if people want to use it, they should pay for it.
And so they haven't used it, and now we're in danger of losing our public media.
Well, that's
not a good position either.
Well, as you all know, Elliot Spitzer said that to me not that long ago. And maybe we can play a little bit right here. So a while back, we had a conversation, and you said you had some reservations about the government giving money to public broadcasting. I wonder if you'd talk to me about that for a minute.
Sure. I don't want to say I'm an absolutist about the First Amendment because one should be an absolutist about precious few things, but I have always worried either about the government's effort to curtail speech or to support through funding speech, even though in many contexts it does great things. But the risk, of course, is apparent. When a politician or a government agency hears content it doesn't like, its first reflex will be to cut the funding. And one would never want speech and political speech to be dependent upon keeping government officials happy. And that's why the deeper and more diverse and broader the public support, as in real public citizenry support for public radio, can be, and the less dependent public radio can be on government funding, the better in terms of independence, the capacity to critique, say what needs to be said, and do what the media should be doing. So the broader and deeper we can demonstrate that support to be, the better off we are.
Well, you know, Elliot Spitzer, we went through that already here at WAMC. It was a point at which George Pataki didn't like our having Mario Cuomo of all people on the air,
yep.
And they took the money away.
Right. No, which is why, Alan, you know, when the far right has said defund NPR, I mean, first of all, they say it, and it's one of their completely frivolous claims, we're going to balance the federal budget by defunding NPR. Of course, we understand there's not only a disconnect, you have to be insane to believe there's any nexus between those two, but it highlights the concern that I've always had, which is you don't want the folks, frankly, on either end of the spectrum to be using public radio and the media and speech as a bargaining chip in any way, shape, or form. And that's why I've said, you know what, if they cut off the money, so be it. I am confident there is a reservoir of public support that is there. And I'm happy and representative of my family to say, hey, we'll step up and do our little bit, and hopefully others will as well.
And so that's a perfect example of talking
about
that.
Well, you mentioned during the fund drive that if Romney wins the election, which is certainly a possibility,
and then
the Republicans control both houses of Congress, that also could change how NPR or public broadcasting is funded in this nation. So the government influence based on on reasons that have nothing to do with the efficacy of the broadcaster, but more about the opinion of the broadcaster could shake up the whole enterprise.
I don't think the system would work in the United States just for the reasons that you're talking about. We would have to implement it. It would be a change from what's there. But in England and in Scandinavia, the system has been different. It's been you contribute to broadcasting to public media, and there's not that sort of interference. We haven't heard big scandals about the government trying to influence.
Well, no, actually, I have to disagree with you. The last thing in the world I'd like to do is disagree with you, Rosemary.
Oh, you do it all the time.
But apparently there is a tremendous push on in Great Britain when the Conservatives come into power. To lessen the amount of money that the Beeb gets. But I am telling you now that Iris' point, which is, and I've said it again and again, we do know that the House of Representatives voted to decapitate the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Right.
They voted for that. So are you telling me that if Mitt Romney becomes the president and the United States Senate gets taken by the Republicans, that the handwriting isn't on the wall, that they'll do it? They are going to defund the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which is, after all, the way that stations get about a tenth of their budget.
This is The Media Project. Ira Fussfeld, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Shartok. We have one piece of mail, and we're going to continue the finance theme, but we're going to get to the real important media now, which is the print media. So here's a suggestion from a reader.
Okay, dear editor, publisher, professor, etc. I'm a little surprised that the newspaper industry hasn't figured out the internet funding problem yet. In one of your episodes, you mentioned something akin to ASCAP, which would build through the search engines. I have a similar idea, but build through the ISPs. The newspaper publishers can form an organization to promote this. In essence, a portion of the price we internet subscribers pay to our ISP would be for news access and would give us full access to the member newspapers who would share the funding. This would not be optional for the subscribers, but of course would be optional for the ISP. I think it's a wonderful idea.
I think it's an interesting idea. I think the first part of his letter where he says, I'm surprised the industry hasn't figured this out yet, suggests that we've been sitting on our hands, and maybe that's too...
Sitting on your hands or some other place.
Yes, yes. I mean, there are a number of ideas out there, this among them, and we still don't know which one, if any, is going to work.
Even this one, it is an interesting idea. I have no idea. Maybe you do, Ira. How do you implement this? How do you begin?
Well, you go to the ISPs and you tell them that part
who
of your...
Who does? You go. Who is you?
The Newspapers Association.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine it could be computerized, and it doesn't have, you don't have to have somebody sitting at a screen
Look, I love the New York Times Online, and I read it in the middle of the night. I read in a day, but I pay a subscription for that. But then I say, well, you know, the Washington Post pretty good.
The Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal, they're not in trouble. They're going to be fine. They have a special niche. It's regional papers. It's the Times Union. It's your paper in Kingston that we're talking about.
Gotcha. And they're all beginning to put paywalls up.
Well, no, they're not. Mine is not.
Well, I believe Rex's is, isn't it?
He hasn't said or revealed what will happen when they do their iPad app. I'm not sure about that, but they do not charge for access to their primary website, nor do we.
I see.
Yeah, I mean, again, our company, which is not the same as Rex's, our company believes in not having a paywall for people to read, but for as many people to come on the site as often as they want, so that we have significant enough traffic to convince advertisers to pay for it.
Yes and no. I mean, I remember when Rex's paper would put stuff on later in the week up on the, you know, I think you guys did some of that too.
We don't put 100%, but we put about 98%.
See, but I'd like to have 100%, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, that's an old model. I mean, when the internet first began coming in strong, newspapers would not put things on the internet. They didn't want to scoop their own papers, how they'd say it. And that didn't work. And then they figured out, okay, we're not scooping ourselves. We're bringing people to us first. And they would use the internet to draw people to paper. Then it changed.
Well, you know, one of the great pieces of history to be written, and it's too soon for it to be written, is whether or how newspapers handled the internet at the very onset of the internet.
That's going to be a great PhD thesis.
Because we all rushed to get a website up in one form or another, and we didn't charge for access.
Right.
Yeah. And the question is, if you believe that the paywall is the way to go, and that the paywall is more difficult to implement, and it is, once people have been receiving this information for free, then the great moaning is going to be, why didn't we charge from day one?
Well, whatever the thing, it still hasn't been figured out. But I do think we're going towards paywalls. I think that's what's beginning to happen, because somebody's got to pay for those reporters and somebody's got to pay, you know, what these newspapers have. And I do believe that's where it's going to go. And I think your original letter writer makes a very good point. Why not figure out a way? And this is just one way that the letter writer is suggesting. Another way is that a whole bunch of newspapers get together. And they say, all right, for our paper alone, this is the price you pay. But if for a deal to get everybody or to get 10 newspapers, you put this amount of money.
You mean Gannett is going to call Hearst and Hearst is going to call Journal Register Company and we're going to decide that collectively? I don't think we can do that.
That's exactly what I mean.
Plus, I just can't see the demand for it. I'm thinking my neighbors back in Colony and they're going to say, what the hell do I care about the paper?
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
I don't see that.
Not everybody needs what I need.
Yeah, and yeah. I don't agree with your basic premise, which is that everybody is going to go to a paywall because there are clearly more companies going to paywalls. It remains to be seen whether that's the successful strategy. I think, and my company thinks, that that's a desperation strategy.
Really?
And that the way to, in part beyond the model that we have, which is that the advertisers will underwrite it, the broader picture is that the internet is wide open, and somebody is going to be competing with you who is not necessarily, in my case, say, the Poughkeepsie Journal or the Middletown Record, or in Albany's case, the Schenectady Gazette. There are too many other places for people to be sitting down in computers and doing real journalism and not charging for it. So you need to have access to your site. If you're putting up the paywall, many people are going to say, sorry, I'd rather go somewhere else, and I can go somewhere else. And again, That's the great mystery.
Nodding affirmatively.
That makes sense to me. I mean, I'm a big news user, but the paywall even annoys me. The paywall annoys me even at the New York Times.
Sure.
Because it's so easy to get around.
Of course you're annoyed.
No, I'm annoyed, and I don't use it as much as I did. And I'm an avid news user.
And
so
I love
a regular
it.
Reader. You know?
And I love it, and I use it 10 times a day.
But I want to go on during the summer occasionally. The old sports fan in me wants to go and read the Boston Globe. And I want to read Dan Shaughnessy's column in the Boston Globe. That is behind a paywall. And now I'm not a regular customer, so they'll live without me. But I am an eyeball or two eyes that would come more or less frequently to that site.
Let me play the other side of this for you, because usually you say this to me. Who's going to pay for that sports?
The advertisers.
Right?
Yeah.
But the advertisers, we know how bad that logic is, because the advertisers aren't willing to pay for the web the way they were willing to pay for print.
Oh, but it's changing dramatically. The spending on web all across the board, newspaper sites, their own sites, the broadcaster site, it's changing dramatically. For newspapers, the race against time is, as the web advertising revenue increases in double digits as it is, it's still a relatively small number versus the amount of money in print that's going in the other direction.
As you say, a race against time.
It's a race against time.
Because we do know that newspapers are having such a tough time. I was just listening to our colleague Rosemary this morning.
Yeah.
Such a tough time that they're firing all kinds of people.
Well, that brings us
worse and worse.
That's right. And that brings us back to the Times-Picayune in New Orleans, which we've discussed for the last couple of weeks.
And Detroit now is.
And Detroit
is
as well, which is a different company.
Yeah.
But the Times-Picayune, which is part of Advance Media, the Newhouse chain, for those who hadn't heard, announced that it was cutting back its print publication schedule, eliminating 3 days a week, much to the consternation of the readers in that community who have been largely supportive of that newspaper, perhaps even more so percentage-wise than in many major cities. And we've been wondering when the other shoe was going to drop, and the other shoe has dropped. And in the case of New Orleans, they're going to be laying off roughly half of their newsroom.
And you were talking, Rosemary, about some of the kinds of people who get laid off of a paper like that.
The cuts are outrageous, because when you cut half, you're not like doing it surgically, picking out people that you need only marginally. They've lost a food critic in New Orleans.
In New Orleans, the great food place of the world.
They've lost their political cartoonist. He joked, you know, I used to tell people that living in New Orleans and doing what I do represented job security because of the political problems there, and he was laid off. So, I mean, you're changing. When you do that, cutting half of your staff, you're losing. That hurts. You're losing the character of your newspaper.
How many have you lost, Ira?
We've lost people in our much smaller newsroom. Just the news writers themselves is also about half. And
right.
So it has an impact. But now let's look at it from the publisher's standpoint, which is...
That's your job.
That's my job. Mm-hmm. Because it's been said that New Orleans, for example, is still relatively successful as newspapers go. But if newspapers, if their balance sheet is anything like most newspapers' balance sheet, and I'm pretty sure it is, they are looking at month after month after month of declines. And although they may still be profitable now, if they do nothing, then they've got nothing at some point in time. They're going to start losing money. So they've got to make a dramatic model change now, because the direction in which their print publication is going is just too steady to ignore.
Here's the thing I don't understand. It's a model change. A transition is what they're calling it in New Orleans, that we're going to go to something else where we only need half as many people. I don't see any proof that cutting people and going to online publication requires half the people you had.
Well, you're starting out, you're starting, some of the jobs, I'm presuming, because it has to be, are going to be what in the editorial department would be called back office jobs, that is paginators and the like, and you don't have to, and that
food
is a
critic.
Well, now,
political cartoonist.
Now we get into those kinds of substantive writing reporter.
We don't write obits anymore. Newspapers have declined in what they are giving them. They have declined in quality, and all of this crap that we get from publishers,
is
crazy.
But here's the question. What will happen to these newspapers if they continue to do what they're currently doing at the pace and expense that they're currently doing, faced with the revenue decline that we're faced?
Because that's the question. You could see it as sort of a seesaw. If, in fact, the newspaper goes out of business, mm-hmm. before the great transition to digital happens, you know, we're all out of luck.
Yeah, I mean, the first cuts have to be in places that don't have anything to do with content. They have to be business office. They have to be production, where you're no longer printing as many pages, or in New Orleans' case, not printing as many days of the week. And in the case of business office and other kind of clerk positions, they can be consolidated elsewhere.
But wait,
yes.
Ira. This is a truth question.
Yes.
You know, lightning comes out of the sky.
Yes.
You know, if you're not honest about it, you have a choice of laying off a local reporter or laying off somebody who's selling advertising.
No, you lay off neither, hopefully.
Oh,
in our case, we affected a number of efficiencies. That's a nice word to say. In a time in our company when the parent company was going through bankruptcy, we now are trying desperately not to eliminate sales and content positions, and hopefully in content we're going to increase them.
Okay.
We're trying to do the efficiencies on the back end. And at the end of the day, and this is the motto that I use often, is that there is nothing that can solve this problem better than more revenue. And that's really where the concentration is. And that comes back to what we were saying before. Newspapers have said, yeah, we're going to get that revenue through the paywalls. My company is saying we're going to get it through advertising. But at some point in time, if the revenue continues to decline, the newspapers are just going to disappear.
Well, speaking for Rosemary and me,
yes, mm-hmm.
we have our doubts.
I do. I would love to be as hopeful as you sound, Ira, but...
I didn't say I was hopeful. I was saying that's the direction
we're going. That's the plan. I just don't see... I cannot see any hope, actually, that what you're saving is worth it. I mean, even the Washington Post, I mean, have you read it lately? It's like a shadow of its
But you know what
self.
You also see in
it's
what...
It's not
in,
worth it.
It's not the best answer, and I know you're not going to care for it, but you're also seeing on the digital side, on newspapers that have cut staff, more aggregation, more linking to different sources. Even the New York Times...
I love these big words, aggregation,
yes.
and linking. That means less
stealing.
Local content, and everything looks the same.
Maybe.
So we have one newspaper. Why do we need the rest then?
Yeah.
I mean, really, if that's...
I mean, even the New York Times, if you look at their iPads, they will have a cover story on their iPad about a specific story and then links to about 10 or 12 other newspapers around the country.
Homogenization.
That's it. That was the last word.
It's a loss. It's a loss no matter. I mean, it's all in the words. Transition or cut... out of your paper.
Whoops, can't
you
use that
sorry.
Word.
Can
well,
I
the
use
gold,
that
the
word?
Gold,
yeah, that'll have to be beat. Sorry.
The golden era is over, and so is this program. This is the Media Project. Ira Fussfeld, Rosemary Amayo, and Alan Shartok. Thanks for listening.
Off the record about some charming people I have known, for I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspaper men meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspaper men meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, full the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspaper men meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery. She wanted money to buy a new fur coat. To get insurance, she employed skullduggery. She up and cut her husband's only throat. She chopped him into fragments. She stuffed him in a trunk. She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk. Now newspaper men meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's aunt. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk, hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspaper men meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspaper men meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk. Pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery. She wanted money to buy a new fur coat. To get insurance, she employed skullduggery. She up and cut her husband's only throat. She chopped him into fragments, she stuffed him in a trunk. She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk. Now newspapermen meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's aunt. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Their policy's an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries for publishers.